Eldon Taylor with us as we talk about the power of the mind. What I'd like in your calls, questions, of course, for Eldon, but to share stories with us on how you've been able to use positive thinking to do something, luck something. Give us your luck story. That would be great. Or give us your bad luck story. I'll take that, too. And welcome back, Eldon Taylor with us. Eldon's website is eldontaylor.com. His name, Eldon, you were telling us the story of your stage fright.
Yeah, well... So, you know, the bottom line is I'd done this custom InterTalk program, and I listened to this program while I was sleeping. I fell asleep with it playing in the background. I had this dream. The dream was a revivification of a real-life experience where my mother had used me to end an argument between two sides of the family, put me out in the middle of the floor with all these adults and say, "My son sings." Well, you know, I tried. My voice broke up. I was terrified. Tears ran out of my eyes, and I ran from the room. And right then and there, I knew I'm never going to be a singer. But what I didn't know was that that performance anxiety would become a mechanism that made it impossible for me to get up in front of a huge group, or for that matter, George, to have a conversation like I am having with you,
with
millions of people out there listening to it. I sat up from the dream. I realized at that moment exactly what my fear was based on, what that mechanism was. I looked up, my mother had crossed over at that point, looked up at the ceiling, remember this well, and said, "Gee, thanks, Mom." But, you know, what happens when we have an uncovering like that is analogous to the small child who's frightened of the boogeyman in the corner in the bedroom. Calls out to Mom and Dad, they open the door, throw the lights on, and it's how they threw their clothes on a chair or the coat hanging on a closet door. Everybody jokes about it, they shut the light off, close the door. You still have that same boogeyman, but it's no longer a boogeyman. You can look right at it, you know what it is, and it's lost its power. One of the things that, you know, I have found it's critical for us moving forward is to uncover these self-destructive, self-sabotaging mechanisms that hold us in place because our true belief says we're not good enough. We don't deserve. Or if you do this, you know what's going to happen to you. You're going to be ridiculed. You're going to be criticized. You're going to be embarrassed. You're going to be humiliated, and on and on.
Well, let me tell you something. You have been able to master this, and so many other people can do the same thing if they try. I want to ask you about psychic vampires, Eldon.
Okay.
Some of them don't know that they're doing this, that they're just literally sucking the energy from people. Others, they know that. How do you get to become one? How does that happen?
Well, you know, I think the breeding ground for that kind of situation is built in victimhood, which is often associated with codependence. You're raised in an environment where Mom says, "Now, if you love me, you do this for me." Dad says, "You know, I did this for you. I expect you to do this for me." Everything becomes a bargain, a quid pro quo, a codependent kind of thing, where your behavior, your attitude is controlled by this mechanism, this codependent mechanism. And you receive the result of your failure. You're no good. You're not smart enough. You'll never amount to anything. So you load up all this negativity. Now you're the victim. And it's always the victim that's a psychic vampire. They're the ones that are telling you how terrible life is. They're the ones that are, maybe they're in front of you saying, "I need your help, this is going wrong, it's just," they're the ones that are constantly complaining. They're the people, you can walk into a pub, one of those pubs near retail centers, a shopping mall, where everybody goes, you know, the crew from Sears, the crew from Penny's, they all go have their beer on a Friday night afterwards. You can see these little groups of people that'll be together, and they'll be over in their corner, and you can look right at them, and you know they're all taking turns at who is the largest victim. You know what happened to me today on my way to work? You know, this cop stopped me, and, you know, I was only going 5 over, but he wrote me, it was da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, that's so bad, Susie. But you know what happened to me, Susie? My husband this morning, they're swapping these stories that are victim stories. For all intent and purposes, that's the kind of person that becomes a psychic vampire. They're focused totally on the negative. And again, they'll appear to you as complainers, they'll appear to you as codependents, they'll always have a victimhood sign over their head.
I had a producer in St. Louis, great guy, loved the kid. He always came in and said he had a black cloud over his head.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything that he started was, this isn't going to work for me, or this isn't going to happen. Always. And you know what? It never did.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, we there's a lot of research that's been done in the power of the self-fulfilling prophecy. One of them that I really like bears some real relevance on just how powerful they are. A study was done by David Phillips at UC San Diego, where what he wanted to do was see if death and dying could be attached to your belief, okay? So this fellow, this producer you're talking about, he had a belief that life sucked and then you died. It's a wonderful attitude, of course, self-fulfilling prophecy, too. But at any rate, what Phillips did is he went to China and he looked at records. In China, their astrological system is accompanied by what you will die of, not just a vocation and your, you know, avocational interests and you know, attitudes, etc., personality, but what you're going to die of. So he wanted to see if there was any correlation between what you really died of and what your horoscope said you would die of. So if you were born under the sign of the dog, as a case in point, maybe it said you were going to die of cancer. The sign of the horse, maybe it was you'd live long and go in your sleep. The correlation was so robust that this became a seminal study, absolute evidence for exactly what the power of belief can bring to you. You know, belief is probably the most important thing people need to understand about themselves. All these negative thoughts that we have, these self-sabotaging ideas that we're not good enough or we can't do, or I've never been good at math, or I just can't master this, or I just don't deserve it. And often we don't know that we really don't believe we deserve things. These can be mechanisms, again, in the unconscious, like the defense strategy we discussed earlier. But what happens with the power of belief is that we literally proscribe what we will see in the world. We put on a lens. That lens becomes our perception. We look out into the world and we expect a crappy world. That's how we interpret the world. If we look out into the world and we see a positive, helpful world, that's how we interpret the world. And it, in turn, impacts us directly, not just as in the Chinese horoscope, death and dying, but in every way. You know, we've got studies where we look at multiple personality disordered patients. In one personality, eye color is brown. Snap your fingers. They change personalities. Eye color is blue. Now, how's that possible? DNA's hardwired, right? I mean, they can have a hematoma on their arm. In one personality, it's there. The next personality, it's gone. In one personality, they can be hypoglycemic. The next personality, their normal blood sugar. Snap of a finger, personality changes. What happens when a personality changes is they people change their belief about who they are, you know? And in that change of the belief, we have a physiological change immediately. And, of course, the placebo research today is showing us more and more that a powerful placebo will indeed interact with you in the same way that medication does. We have placebos where we get 80-90% effectiveness. And the interesting thing is you can use an MRI, you can pull blood tests, and you can see that the placebo did indeed change the physiology. It didn't. It isn't a matter of, well, I thought I was better. No, you actually are better. And there's some fun studies that they've done. They've shown that you give you a cigarette and tell you it doesn't contain any nicotine. Give you a cigarette that contains nicotine.
And then what happens?
Smoker draws on a cigarette with nicotine. We watch brain activity. He draws on a cigarette he believes doesn't have nicotine. We don't see the same brain activity. The same reward centers don't light up.
It's the placebo effect.
Yeah, you can call it a placebo effect. I think of it more as just belief. If you believe something, you can almost assuredly know that you're going to manifest that
yes.
in your life. So if life sucks and then you die, well, good luck with that.
You can manifest. Let's go to the calls. You ready?
Sure.
Patrick in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Let's get you going. Patrick, go ahead.
George, I'd like to, if I can, tell you two stories. I love your guests on here.
All right, sure.
One's a positive, one's a negative. The positive one on myself is I didn't notice this until I was about 35 years old, but I call it the power of focus. But whatever I had focus on and wanted to be there by a certain age, I got it.
You got it, yeah.
Yes, I wanted to be in business by myself when I was 30. Well, when I turned 30, then a month later in September, I was in my own business.
I love it.
And my subconscious all the time was picking up things of what I needed to get into business for myself. And, you know, people would ask me, well, why do you have these machines? And I go, I don't know. I got a good deal on them. And then pretty soon, you know, within that time frame, I'm in business. Now, the negative part of thinking or focusing is I had a buddy who would always say, God, I just shoot myself. You know, I'm going to kill myself in this. And I'd always told him, knock it off, man. You can't think that way. And I was up in Alaska, and within, I just got to the Arctic Ocean, and I get a text from one of my other buddies telling me he's dead. And I think his subconscious had actually had taken in, since he had always said that and routinely said it, he focused on it, that his subconscious had taken him out.
That's conceivable, Eldon, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, if you keep talking to yourself about anything, it's quite possible that what you're doing is you're bringing about that reward expectation, and you're diminishing your sense of arousal or fear about something. You're building a satisfaction box. You're beginning to weigh all the positives that might be gained as a result. By the way, Patrick, I love Rock Springs, Wyoming. My family's from Lander, Wyoming. Kick the dirt up.
Not far from there.
Yeah.
Patrick, what else do you have for us?
Well, that was it. I was just saying, you know, that's, I totally agree what he says, you know, and I call it focus myself, but it's I guess, what you believe in. I've been always told to write your goals down, and I never did, but I've always, what I wanted, I would just keep thinking about it. My house I live in today, I used to park in the church parking lot and look at it, and, you know, when I would go work out in the morning and think what I wanted to do with it and do this and that, And I, all reality, I probably shouldn't have got it just because how long we were tied up in the contracts. But maybe they still got it. So
good for you. Keep doing it. That's what about intention, Eldon? Let me tell you what we did Friday night, as Hurricane Irma was heading to Cuba and then towards Florida. Mm-hmm. It was a Category 5 hurricane. Doesn't get much worse than that.
No.
And I had the audience do an intention moment to try to reduce the strength of the hurricane before it hit Florida and to push it and just let it go. And I said, you know, folks, meditate, think about it when you can, but concentrate on doing that. Over 2 days, that hurricane Category 5 dropped down to a tropical depression.
Right.
The damage was extensive, but had it hit as a Category 5, it would have obliterated Florida.
Right.
Do you think this had anything to do with that?
You know, I know that the weather people are going to say it diminished because it hit land, it began to run against obstacles, they always diminished, da-da-da-da-da. This is what I would say, George. My own opinion, yes, probably did. Why would I say that? Well, the science side of me goes immediately to studies that have been done where meditators have lowered the crime rate in cities like D.C. Statistically, we have evidence that when a collective group of people focus, as you just indicated, they can influence other people just through mind, just through thought process, just through intention.
Yep, absolutely. Rich in Monterey, California is with us now. Hey, Rich, go ahead.
Hey, I love your guest and the guests you've had lately. So super. Hey, on the thing of intention, I actually heard that the social consciousness of the world, once it hits 10% of the people, things start happening. So what you guys just said, I've heard that before. But on the brighter side, I always like to try and pick up people I talk to. I always want to make them leave them with a laugh. So whenever I hear someone pessimistic, I say, I don't know why you're so pessimistic. It probably won't work out that way anyway.
So true.
Good for you. Good for you.
Okay.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate you being part of the program. Eldon, it does work. I mean, there's no question about it. Can you use it, I hate to say this, but can you use it for evil purposes?
What, intention?
Intention.
Well, you know, the answer to that was I absolutely believe so. As you know, I've written books on mind control and the subordination of free will, and you know, if you look at a lot of the things that have gone on, you have to ask what kind of sane person would carry out these experiments on Americans, on fellow citizens, whether it was to spray a biological agent using the fog into San Francisco and kill an American, or it's to give a venereal disease to black people. I mean, what on earth would give rise to that? And I think what happens is you get this group thinking going on, this hive thinking. You get people together and they start thinking a certain way. You know, there's a desensitization that goes on, George.
Sure is.
I remember years ago watching I don't know, some police movie. I think it was Hill Street Blues. And a man's in an accident. He's hit by a car, and he flies from the car across the guide wire, and it cuts his hand off just above the wrist.
Ouch.
The medics are there. Two detectives are close to the scene, so they roll up. The medics are loading him to take him to the hospital, and they tell him, find his hand. So these two detectives start searching for the hand, and one of them looks down in this trash bin, and there it is. And he picks it up by the finger, holds it up to his partner. There's a wristwatch on it. And he says, takes a lick and keeps on ticking.
Oh, we're coming back for final calls next. Back with Eldon Taylor, our final segment here as we're talking about the power of the mind. Let's get back to what we were talking about in the beginning, Eldon, and that is self-sabotaging. Much like we've been talking about luck and things like that, you do this to yourself, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. It's not something somebody else does to you.
We're to blame.
Well, I don't want to say that. I want to say you're to blame, because the process is one of really the entire enculturation. It's a part of the environment, you might say native environment, that we live in today. Everywhere you turn around, there's competition for the newest, the greatest, the best. People are getting in line right now to buy the new iPhone X. $1,000 a copy.
Oh, crazy.
What? You know, it becomes a posing thing. You know, we put our prestige into the things that we own. we, in a very real sense, are a little bit like Sambo's tiger, you know. We chase our tail until we're somebody else's butter. We spend our lives in this consumption cycle. And unfortunately, we've been taught that we're not good enough, that we're deficient in some way. We have been taught that we can't soar, that we're really chickens in a chicken house, not eagles, given the opportunity to do indeed. You know, one of my favorite pieces of research is a study that was done where teachers were told that they were being given a gifted child. The child has an IQ off the charts, they were told, but he's peculiar in his behavior. And they were actually given learning disadvantaged children. At the end of the school year, what they found is they had turned these disadvantaged children into very precocious children, just based on what's called the Pygmalion effect, just based on the expectation of that teacher and how that teacher treated him. Well, you know, unfortunately, we're not all raised in an environment that is designed to bring out our very best. A lot of what we encounter as we mature in life shames us, embarrasses us, humiliates us, discourages us, and in every other way diminishes who we really are, you know, what our real potential is. But you know, George, not long ago I attended a CEU hosted by a neurologist. That was all about the latest research findings based on neuroscience, fMRI, PET, and one of the, you know, there were two bottom lines, two take-homes from this all-day course, continuing ed course. The first one was, all these things that we think about that stop us from being successful, all these things, beliefs that we have, I'm not any good at math, and so I've always failed at math. I'm just not very smart, whatever it might be. The first one is, you absolutely can change. But the most powerful, the second takeaway, and this is hard science, not some new age fluff, you can only change what you believe you can change. Now listen, you can anatomically change your brain. In fact, you know, meditation has been shown to rewire the brain, to increase gray matter, to increase cognitive abilities, such as memory. You absolutely can even change the anatomical nature of your brain, your personality. It's really in everybody's own hands to turn, stop for a minute, stop diminishing themselves. Rewrite that conversation in their head, that self-talk, that mirror on what we really believe. You know, you can get people together, and you can say, and I've done this many, many times, I want everybody to say to themselves now, I love myself. Only takes a second before you see people's eyes go down, their head goes sideways, you know, that little tell. In days that I used to conduct interrogation, I could say to somebody, did you take the missing money? No. And I'd watch their head go sideways. Yes. Okay? Or I mean up and down. Indicating yes. You would see the opposite. Those little tells, if we pay attention to those tells, we can catch them. We can cancel them. You know, when that thought comes in that says, well, I don't know that I can do this, wait a minute, cancel it. Just simply say, cancel that one. And if you want to be mindful, don't judge the thought, but follow the thought. Where did that come from? When did that first originate? And in that process, you desensitize it, and the thought becomes less and less. You know, the reason that I created InnerTalk in the very first place was a way to re-script your self-talk so that you got rid of the negative and you got in the positive. I can tell you, I could give you thousands of testimonials, but we've run in over two dozen studies now, most of which are double-blind studies, showing that whether it was depression or examination anxiety or attention deficit hyperactive disorder, change the way you talk to yourself and you'll change your expectation, which changes your behavior, which changes the outcome.
It works.
Absolutely.
Joe in Boston. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Good morning, George, and good morning, Tom, and good morning. Is it Eldon?
Eldon, E-L-D-O-N, Eldon.
Eldon, yes. When I'm through, would Tom give him my number? I'd like to talk with him off the air. Eldon, I agree with you, but I have a hard time, a lot of us do, who are alone and been dumped off by our family and no good. And I'd like to tell you a story and ask you how you would change this.
Okay.
I've been waiting, and George, you said you like both stories. I did forgive my father, by the way, when he was cruel to me. That I could do. When I'm looking for an apartment, I found one. It took 2 years to find an apartment. I was on the list. I went to see it. I was pushed by my driver who drove me. You don't deserve this place. I work. So I couldn't take it at the time. I said, I'll call him back the next day. They put me at the bottom of the list. I can't get anybody to, and corporations, they're not supposed to be, like you said, just for money. But where's the compassion? How do you get people like this to change and say, all right, we'll give you 24 hours, give us a call, bring down the money, and now I'm at the bottom of the list. How do you deal with these kind of things, Eldon?
Well, I'll tell you how I deal with them, and that's the best that I can do. Stuff like that happens. The fact of the matter is, life is not always good to us. I mean, there are bad things that come along, and good people very often have to deal with those bad things. So, you know, the first thing to do is to recognize that if these are the people that you are going to rent this apartment from, well, are they really the kind of people that you
want to rent them
from? Landlords?
That's right.
I mean, if they are going to do that, I mean, maybe that was a blessing in disguise, you know? I try to always find a solution that makes me feel good. I'll share a short story with you, John, that makes his point, okay? Got a guy goes to New York. It's the first time he's ever been there. He's wanted to go there all his life. He's dreamed about it. He's got postcards up about it. He arrives in New York, and it's a gloriously perfect day. He's walking down the sidewalk, you know, in Manhattan, just appreciating things, finds himself wandering off the main course, and suddenly he's in this high-rise condo area, walking along. Look at these gorgeous condos, balconies, just a beautiful, manicured everything. Beautiful day, and a flower pot falls from the second-story balcony.
Hits him.
Strikes him on the head.
Does it kill him?
Charged fall to the sidewalk. He's got an abrasion, he's got a bump, but he's going to be okay. He's aware he's going to be okay.
He's lucky.
Okay, now you got some choices, John. The first choice everybody always gives me is, I'm going to pick up those flower pot chars, I'm going to take them upstairs, and I'm going to put them you know where. But, of course, if you get up there and you discover he's a New York Giants lineman, you may change your mind.
Or you have the wrong place.
Right. The second one is, you know, I'm going to sue this sack cat. I'm going to make some money out of this. I'll bet I could settle this quickly. The third one is, I'm going to be metaphysical. I'm not going to let this mess with my day. I mean, after all, maybe the blow to my head delivered some special enlightenment, which is just a form of denial. But what if, John, I were to pick up the flower, take it to a florist, have it potted, and then take it to the owner with a knock on the door and a story? You know, your flower pot fell off the balcony and hit me on the head. You probably should be careful about how close to the edge. Might have got a baby in a buggy or something, but I don't want the flower to die. I hope you like the new pot I have it in. Now, when you put your head on the pillow at night, of all those scenarios, which one's going to put a smile on your face? Which one's going to make you feel the best?
Well, probably the last one, I would guess, until the person says, I dropped it on you on purpose.
George, you have an evil mind.
Just kind of diabolical.
Yeah, well, in that instance, I'm going to call law enforcement. But the bottom line is, what you want to do is find a way to see something good in everything that happens to you in your life. Because the bargain is this, John. If you decide to see it negatively, it impacts you directly. You get the wrong neurochemicals going. You begin to build those catecholamines. You shut down your ANS, your endocrine, and your immune. They're not operating at their optimum. Next thing you know, your immune system is weakened, and maybe you got a cold or a flu or something else. And these things, the catecholamines particularly, they age you early. You know, so what you want to do is optimize that physical system of yours to live long, to live healthy. So it's really a selfish bargain. It's a matter of, I'm going to reframe this in such a way that it's positive. You know, somebody cuts me off in traffic, it used to really annoy me.
Bro, you were a road rager, weren't you?
And then one day I realized, you know, I just reframed this a little. Somebody cuts me off, I'm just going to imagine they've got a small child in the back seat and they're on their way to the hospital. That child is in need. They hurt. And all of a sudden, my attitude shifts.
It changes.
I may just be making it up. And I may be aware that I'm making it up. But I want to reframe these things so that I have optimized the operation of my system. And in doing that, I actually fulfill the possibility of living longer and healthier and having more joy in my life. And as we said earlier, that has many benefits on the physiology, including on your DNA.
Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Let's squeeze you in, Bear. Go ahead.
Okay there, George. Hello. Always a pleasure, buddy. I got a great positive thinking story for Eldon.
All right.
Right quick before I do, let me say hello to my buddy Cornelius in Louisiana.
He was on earlier.
I heard him, and he's listening to me right now, and he wished me luck, George, a few weeks ago on the air.
Yes, he did.
With my shoulder, and it's 2 months ahead of time healing. I don't even have to wear a sling or nothing, George.
Keep it going. Anyways, 2 minutes left. Go ahead.
All right, here's my story. You know, I was going to come to the show in Everett, Washington, of course, and the fall kept me from coming. Well, I had put $1,500 worth of tickets on my airplane and Amtrak trip down the coast of California.
Right.
And AAA said that they could not refund my money, that it was gone.
Jeez.
And so I bummed out for about a week. And all of a sudden, I started saying, you know what, I'm going to get a call from them, and they're going to give me my money back. And I want you to know, 3 weeks went by, and last Wednesday, George, the phone rings at 11 o'clock Wednesday morning, and it's AAA. And because I had been a member for 22 years, they gave me my whole $1,500.
Hey, how about that? Save it for the next Everett trip.
Great for you, Barry. Next time you come to the East Coast, I'm going to wait and see you then.
All right. We're going to be all over the map this year and next year. So be it. Eldon, we're running out of time. We've got a minute left. If people want your books, where can they go?
Well, they can get it anywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it at your brick-and-mortar bookstores. The book is Choices and Illusions. And it really is a choice to change your life. And, George, I'm always grateful to have the opportunity to come on your show. I love you, my friend, and I love your show. And I am one of your members, and that's because I don't stay up this late normally.
All right. Well, you take care of yourself. We'll talk to you when the new book comes out, okay?
You got it. Thank you, sir.
Eldon Taylor, great guy. And I'll remember always the interview we did on his latest work then on subliminal messaging. What an incredible moment that was. The things they do to try to get you involved, to buy, and just subliminal things that they just leak right into you. Well, we've got a great series of programs for you all week long here on Coast to Coast as we roll along in September. And let me tell you, this has got to be one of the fastest years. You know it, too. Fastest years ever. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.